Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday. It is the 6th of March. As always, live and lively here on Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests joining me live in the studio. Former ABC correspondent Nathan Thomas, Alf Brewer and John Harper. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page, if you wish to leave a post, is Talk Radio Europe official. We're on Twitter as TRE Talk is good. We're having a conversation that spilled over, and apologies for the technical problem we had with the 11 o'clock news, by the way, that has now been rectified. We were having a talk which spilled over into the closing music of the first hour on populism in politics, and the results coming out of Italy recently, with the right and centre-right parties gaining ground, the Forza Italia parties, the Northern League parties, seem to indicate that there is a swing to the right. There is a swing in populist parties currently stalking through Europe. Nathan, your thoughts on that? I know Al's got some thoughts on it as well.
Well, I think it's very true. I mean, but again, populism, it's popular, and people come up with ideas that sound good to the people who are going to vote, whether how deep they think about it, how much they understand, and how much the politicians are really, in their own minds, believe that they are going to be able to deliver on a lot of what they sell. And this is exactly what Donald Trump did. I mean, he found a couple of areas that were very popular with enough of the people. And again, we talked about in the United States, there was also the big negative of Hillary Clinton, which was another factor, of course. But Trump sold a lot of ideas that he has yet to turn into a reality. I mean, clean coal, it's wonderful. And, you know, all these miners were going back to work. Well, they're all losing their jobs again. Clean coal is no more a reality under Trump than it was under anybody else, because it isn't. He does that. It works. It works in other countries. We see that. I mean, Italy, which has political problems all the time. I mean, they have, you know, they keep switching governments, you know, very regularly. But this time you had people who came up with ideas that they were able to sell, whether they will be able to make them happen. Because, of course, and just going back to Trump, but anywhere, running a government is different than being elected dictator or emperor or something. You can have great ideas, but if you can't make the rest of the government, and no matter who you are, if you're president of the United States, which is supposedly the most powerful person in the world, if you can't get the rest of the government to agree with you somehow, you're not going to be able to do much of anything. And it's that way with any government. And it's a question of what they can actually produce once they get elected. We are seeing more and more swings toward the right, toward nationalism, America first, us first, whoever it is. All those ideas are very easy to sell, but actually turning it into something after you're elected is becoming obviously much more difficult.
And the situation with Italy is we've got two anti-establishment parties who have each claimed that they won the election. You've got the Five Star Party, run by Matteo Salvini, by Luigi Di Maio, and Matteo Salvini, who is the head of the Northern League, the anti-immigrant league, who said they've got the right to govern the country. And in the meantime, you've got the return of Berlusconi. And he looks like there's going to be a coalition between the right-wing league and Berlusconi's party. So,
well, they have no choice. I mean, there has to be a coalition because no one there has won enough to actually easily form a government and do things the way they want to. So you have another coalition, which Italy is famous for, and it will muddle through, and you know the fighting will continue.
It's a lot like Spain, though, isn't it? Because
there doesn't necessarily have to be a coalition. And what is happening at the moment is each of these people are vying to say, well, I can run a government in the country. People will have to follow what we're doing, which was a bit where Rajoy was and a lot where Rajoy is now, because they haven't really got a government of a coalition. Rajoy relies on another party to vote along with him in Parliament. But there's no coalition between the two. And I think that's what's happening with this thing. But when you say, you know, the popular politics, and Giles labelled them, you know, right-wing or more right-wing, or are they left-wing? Podemos was never classed as it. In my political stance, they're all apolitical, because they're populist parties who are leading on a populist line that is anti-establishment. Yeah. Anti-establishment is non-political. It's not I'm against the political party that's running the establishment. They're against the establishment. And trying to change it, and I just go, they're all, you know, weeing over the side, as they say, into the wind. Nothing happened in Greece. Nothing happened in Spain. Yes, you had this big uprising, big surge of people who were anti-establishment, but they never really changed anything. You know, Greece is still paying Germany all that money, and Germany is still, you know, kowtowing to the European Union. You know, Italy, yeah, they've got no chance of pulling out of the euro. It's outside of the constitution of the European Union. They would have to leave the European Union to pull out of the euro. So they say these things because they're popular, but they've got absolutely not a cat in hell's chance of delivering on it, which is, you know, they can't. You can disagree as much as you want, but they have got no chance of delivering on it. And if they've got any indication and any chance of delivering, tell me once in the last 5 years when all these movements have all come to the fore, tell me one place, one country, other than the UK who voted to leave the EU because of UKIP, tell me one country that's changed their politics.
But we seem to be seeing, you know, common thread in this, and this is basically jobs, migration, globalisation, and a distrust of Brussels. These seem to be the main things that all the populist parties share.
Certainly in Europe.
Amen. Yeah. 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 I mean, look, you're looking at, until Brexit, there was absolutely no hope for any populist type thinking person to think that we could make a difference. Brexit suddenly threw a spanner in the works. It actually showed that the ordinary people, and if you look at the voting pattern on Brexit, most of them were very ordinary people in that 17.4 million people. They were the lorry drivers.
Sorry, John, that wasn't Brexit. Brexit was the outcome of a movement called UKIP,
okay,
who convinced a dopey Tory leader to put his neck on the line and say to the British people, do you really want to stay in Europe? I mean, we could have all given him, we did on this programme, we could have all given him the answers, it's going to be close, but the chances are British people don't want to stay in the European Union because we've got no control over our borders, they suck all our money away, etc, etc. Yeah, everybody had a 17.4 million, could have been 27 million, it didn't matter. You have to compare that with what happened in Scotland and on the Scottish referendum for independence, where they didn't vote for it because it wasn't about populism, because it wasn't a popular vote, and it wasn't something they were saying. You couldn't go to Scotland and say we've got to ban immigration because it wouldn't have worked.
Let's go to quick through the lines while we ponder that one. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. Would that be A?
Wouldn't be you. Good morning, Jason. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thank you. Listen, hey, is it any wonder that people are so disillusioned, disenfranchised with these absolute buffoons that have been running politics, running the world? You know, for many centuries, even the policies are always short term, aren't they? You know, it's all greed and short-term politics, and the environment and the planet suffered. Their policies have helped destroy this planet, which is something we never discuss on this program, even though it's probably the most important thing, current affairs. So I think that this is going to get worse, and people are going to become more and more rebellious in a way, because the people that have led them have betrayed them and betrayed the planet, really, because what are you going to do when the life support and the environment's done. There'd be no politics. There'd be no talk radio. There'd be no viewpoint, and there'd be nothing to discuss, will there?
So well, I mean, that's the nightmare doomsday scenario, obviously, for me,
no,
Jason.
Giles, I've not been sensational. I've been serious. You know, it's like it's the most important thing, but that should drive politics, the planet, because you can't have politics without a planet, can you? You can't have nothing. You know, so why aren't policies centred around taking more care of our planet, you know, and the financial things should be secondary, because one can't exist without the other, can it? So it is a serious point, and it's a fair point, and I challenge anyone that says it's not.
Jason, I didn't mean to make. Thank you very much for that one. 952-78-4000. Just going back to the Italian vote and what could mean. Perhaps the EU has always said it wanted to bring Europe closer to the people, but surely a reaction like this, it's interesting because you've got this reaction in Italy where they voted for a populist party, and yet the EU has returned the government of Angela Merkel as well over the past couple of days. So perhaps Brussels again needs to take a long, hard look at itself and what it means to be the European Union, what it means to be European, and perhaps their idea of an idea. I mean, Alf used the words, the dreaded words, European army, a little bit earlier in this programme. You know, is it time for the EU to take stock of people and say that we're not all, you know, federalists from the Low Countries, and Europe is a fascinating mezcla, a fascinating melting pot of cultures and ideologies, and we should be embracing that panel.
Panel, right, okay. Wow, completely lost my track on that one. Basically, as George Carlin said, don't worry about the planet. The planet's just fine. It's humanity that's got the problem. So you know, if anything happens 400 years from now, we won't be sitting in this studio. We'd be sitting in the middle of an overgrown crop of ground, because basically humanity would disappear within 400 years. We'd be back to a nice green planet. So don't worry about the planet. Planet's fine. It's humans that have got the problem. Coming back to what we're talking about on the Italian thing, basically, it's the start of it. Alf says, oh, it's nothing happened in the last 5 years. This is just the start. We had 40 years of creeping globalism come in. Over the last 40 years, we've crept gradually to that. So to a point where most people under the age of 50 probably think it's just normal that we are a global economy, that everything's global, that we've got to have open borders. That ain't the way it is. The older people and the people who actually have got any awareness are aware that our governments, our political elites have been destroying things for a long, long time to their own benefit. The objective is to have a subjective, obedient population that pay taxes and keep everything going and everybody comfortable. The people are rejecting that. They will reject it. And it may be that it only slows globalism down for 10 or 15 years, but it's certainly a big spanner in the works. And they really won't win until the dinosaurs like me have died out and the younger brainwashed generation actually go along with their globalist policies and say, hey, tell me what to do from the time I get up in the morning to the time I go to bed. But it ain't going to happen that way anyway, because this world's not got that amount of time left in it.
Well, without getting into too deep a political conversation, because it is about politics, I don't understand when people got globalisation. I'm not sure what I understand what it means for me, and I understand it from the basis of industrial movement, but that's gone on forever. The Industrial Revolution wasn't something that was welcomed by everybody, because it forced everybody out of the fields and into the cities. Yeah, and not everybody appreciated that, but it drove whatever was going on at the time. So I don't understand what you mean by creeping globalism. What all that was a bunch of people who opposed the big organizations, the big companies, the global companies, who are bigger than most countries in the world. You know, certainly bigger than any African country, certainly bigger than most European countries, except for the big three. Yeah, this has been going on for years. We had a Second World War, and the biggest single place that benefited from globalisation, if that's the term, was Germany. Because the Americans ain't stupid. Britain never had any money, neither did France. But the Americans poured all their effort and everything and invested in Germany. Not because they wanted to see Germany succeed, because it was big money to be made from it. You know, whatever it's called, begins with L. The Americans bought a country in Africa to grow rubber plants because the British stopped the Americans buying rubber.
Liberia.
And then when they'd finished with it, because they found some other thing to do, they let them cut them off and go. And now they try to grow bananas and they can't sell them to Europe because Europe won't accept the bananas from there. It's just, the whole thing has been going on for forever. And we should stop talking about it as if it has never existed. Or the last 40 years, we're talking about globalisation, and the single biggest, in my view, the single biggest thing that's affected all of it is communication. Communication is so much quicker today. People get information so much quicker now than they did. You know, I was born in the 50s. I'm a child of the Second World War. Yeah, we never had all the fancy technology that we've got now. I was born into the telecoms industry. I saw the change. The change was so rapid. Even us inside the industry couldn't keep up with it. Yeah, we went from twin drive floppy computers that were brand new into whacking great big, you know, machines to PCs in 20 years. 20 years, that's globalisation.
We're going live to the lines. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Sharon Alicante. Just to say, I think one of the biggest globalisers actually is America. If you look at the Starbucks and the McDonald's and the Kentucky Fried Chickens that none of us can get away from, I mean, it's a horror of horrors to me, Starbucks coming to Spain and closing down all the small coffee bars. And now with the tech industry, guess who's ruling the tech industry? It's America. It's not the EU. And also, some people have benefited from globalisation. Some of the poorer people in Africa have benefited, on the continent of Africa, have benefited from globalisation. So who are we to say you can't have what we've always had? So I think America's got a lot to do with this. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for that one. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at tre.radio, the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. Nathan, your thoughts on what you've heard from our two panellists?
Well, if you're talking about globalization and getting into the whole Starbucks and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all of that, and they only exist because people want them. I mean, yes, it all started in those things started in the United States, and they branched out. I mean, I don't know whether you consider that almost a political movement is the way people are talking about it. I mean, this is the U.S. trying to force itself on everyone else. I mean, they were businesses, each individually said, hey, I've got a product that's really good here. Let's try it somewhere else. Now, nobody is forcing anyone in Spain or any other country or in the United States to go to Starbucks. Personally, I don't see the whole big deal, but it's there. It works. I don't know who you blame for it. I don't know whether there is blame to be handed out for it. It is a product that, or it's more than a product, but it's a business, it's a concept, it's whatever it is that people seem to like. It doesn't matter where you are. And who are you blaming for that?
I'm blaming Popeye.
Why are you blaming Popeye?
Because Popeye had a character in it called Wimpy. Wimpy was the first burger place to open in London, and that was the forerunner for Burger King, and worse than that, McDonald's and all the other fast food.
Nobody made you buy that stuff.
No, but because it was on the television, everybody wanted a Wimpy. We'd never heard of beef.
And that's the
beef
point.
Burger. We'd never heard of them until the television came along.
I was in Madrid when the first McDonald opened in Gran Vía.
Paso del Sol.
Yeah, no, Gran Vía.
Was it okay?
Gran Vía in Madrid, and I was standing there in Madrid, looking at this queue outside McDonald's, and just two doors along was a beautiful tapas bar. And I couldn't, at a moment in time, I could not understand why any Spaniard would actually choose to go and eat a McDonald's rather than a tapa.
And I'd just like to leap in here and say that is not the opinion of TRE, and we wish to retract that remark and apologise for it. We go live to the lines. Good morning, Corley, you're live on TRE.
Charles, Peter again.
Sorry, Peter, yes.
Yeah, I think everybody's missing the point on globalisation. It's nothing to do with Burger King or McDonald's, I don't think. It's the bigger picture. And I've mentioned it numerous times on this programme. We have got to a point now where globalisation has pushed forward so much, we are now hitting the glass ceiling. You can't get much bigger than the big companies that are out there. I mean, there's talk of what they call a FANG economy, which is Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. These companies now are so huge, massively huge, across the world, that they cannot virtually expand without gobbling up everything behind them. So every time Amazon turn around and say, we might think of doing this, that whole industry is virtually wiped out overnight. They said they might get into the distribution of medication. Straight away, the chemists and everything start shutting down. They are having an effect. And I've said before, we have six massive media companies, six massive car companies, six massive insurance companies. They're all in each other's pockets. They price fix, and nothing is... No one can grow, no one can move up because they have so much power, because they lobby these governments.
And Peter, would you say that they're getting special treatment? Because you see when you have massive, you have companies like your Google and your Amazon, and when it comes to their, for example, their tax regulations, they're having to deal, they're doing special deals with governments.
Exactly to that point, that they have so much power now that they can call the shots, and governments will bend over backwards for them. And this talk of jobs, that they will bend over backwards to relocate them, or relocate them on paper, or to give them a certain deal. But we have a handful of individuals out there now. Take Jeff Bezos. He's just gone over the $100 billion. Now, I've said before, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. I don't believe in government interference in it. It should be everything finds its own price. Capitalism doesn't work without governments. Governments don't work without capitalism. But the problem we have now, they are so huge, nothing else can expand or grow without being swallowed by them. And like I said, with Jeff Bezos, $100 billion. Go back the opposite way. When we talk about the distribution of wealth now, someone has $100. That means the way it is now, that $100, he has $84, and the other 99% out of 100%, are fighting over $16. So if you have 100 people in a room, one guy gets $84, the other fight over $16. That's the position we're in at the moment. Now, everything should find its own level. If you don't interfere, if governments don't interfere, you will have a natural supply and demand. Prices always find their, water always finds its own level. But we have moved up so far, so fast, so high, this handful of people, all these boards, they're all the same people, the same families sitting on the boards of the same companies. No one else can move now. It's end game, as far as I'm concerned, where the economy is. I don't see how much... You can't globalise, complete globalisation. So...
What's the solution?
The solution is default. Hit the button, go back to somewhere. In the wild, I always say, take notice of nature. If you had a group of animals and one of them was feeding, taking all the food, the others would turn on it. The only reason the 99% don't turn, or the 94% don't turn on the 1%, because there's a 5% buffer of comfortable people. And that's the problem. And everyone's being nailed down. There is massive poverty, unemployment. The fall of the empire, everything that brings an empire down, globalization, currency devaluation, debauchery, everything that brings it down, the West is suffering from at the moment.
Peter, one of the reasons I love doing this show is the reactions from the panel, and I've got John Harper nodding his head, Alf shaking his head, and Nathan absolutely like the impassible, like the Sphinx. So thanks, thanks for those comments in. Right, John,
I do try to. I normally like to light the blue touch paper and stand back, so I'll leave you there.
You lit the blue touch paper, Peter. You're right. We need a reset, and resets happen anyway, whether we like them or not. And because everything's happened so fast, we've all got into this globalist concept and mentality. And as I've said in many, many articles and times I've written, actually all we need to do is get out of consumerism. If you don't buy Nikes, if you don't buy all these brands, if you actually just stop feeding into the global economy for 3 months as a civilization, the globalists would collapse, they would implode, because they only... actually can exist by continually increasing the consumerization, people buying more and more and more. And if we stop buying, they disappear and we'd be back to the corner shops. So that's a reset. The second reset would be if we have an atomic war, and I do note that China's just moved 400,000 troops up to the Korean border to add to the 100,000 they've got there. So they've got 500,000 troops sitting on the Korean border after 2 weeks after a little meeting with Trump. So that's interesting. We don't know what's going to happen. There's lots of stuff out there. There is a reset coming. Whether the globalists try to reset it by collapsing the economies and trying to bring about a global one currency thing, or whether it's down to the people just saying we're not playing anymore, that's what we're looking at. That's where we come to. Either you're going to actually say, no, I'm not going to support this anymore, I'm backing out, I'm not going to actually do it, and you'll effectively stop playing their game, or you are a globalist and you say, oh, we've got to actually stop these populists. End of the war, end of thing, civil war in the world, so to speak.
Right then,
I've just never heard so much Tommy rotting all my life. Not just John, but the last, was it Peter? It's just, it's nonsense. People are not going to change. People are aspirational. I go back to a time we never had fridges, we never had washing machines, we never had televisions, we never had radios, we never had this, that, and the other. And he comes on and says, oh, and by the way, talking about Burger King and you're missing the point on globalism. Let's talk about Amazon. No, and that's a nonsense. They're just service providers. This is all about services. What do you make in order to sell to somebody else? It's called trade. You don't trade Amazon. Amazon and a transport industry that gets trade working with each other. So it's about trade. What do you build? What do you grow?
Amazon don't grow anything.
Precisely. So Amazon is nothing to do with globalisation. No, they're not the cause of it either. Long before them. How about UPS trying to wipe out the World Postal Service? You know, come on, it goes along. What about all the governments, including the UK government, that says, well, we really must get away with this Little Britain idea and we need to open our markets to everybody else. Yeah, and what we do is we'll sell our post office, we'll sell all the services to UPS.
That is all part of a globalist plan.
No, it might be part of the globalist plan, but people go along with it.
Because
people
they're not now, though, Alf. They're waking up.
People go into Burger King and buy a burger. People go and, wherever you want. Starbucks, as Nathan was saying. These places don't magically open and stay open doing trade unless people go in there and buy things, which is what people do. So when you're looking at this, people are not going to stop buying Nike shoes. It amazed us when we came to Spain how few Spanish people wear goods that are branded. Very few. Now watch the Spanish now, they're all wearing Nike, Adidas and whatever organisation. You don't go into Decathlon now and buy some tuppenny opening thing from Taiwan. You go in there and see Nike, or it's just aspirational. People will change. And just remember, the whole argument, this guy in the room of 100 people who's getting the 84 things. He needs the rest to survive, so he gives a bit of his money out, and we all say it's good. But I tell you what, for those people who had nothing before, getting one thing is better than getting nothing whatsoever. I come from a family, as you did, John, who had nothing. We had nothing between us, and we didn't sit back saying, well, we don't want a car, we don't want a house, we don't want a television, we don't want a fire, we don't want food. We never said that. And all the time, every family wants their family, their kids, to be that bit better. It's called aspiration. It's not called revolution, which people mix it up with.
Want to go quickly to the lines. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name, where you're calling from, what's your viewpoint, please?
Is this John Dodd? Yes, it is John Dodd, and I'm listening to you very, very faithfully, as usual.
Yes, John, what's your point, mate? What can we have?
What everybody's saying is making very good sense. And I just want to go back to McDonald's.
Right then, okay, although other brands of fast food are available, John.
Well, the thing is, I've raised 8 children, and don't wait for this, I've got 11 grandchildren.
And your McDonald's bill must be quite horrendous on a day out, John.
No, wait for it. I've got 11 more great-great-grandchildren. These are Bello, all professors mass.
Okay.
So you can imagine. It's it, and I think most of you know I run a couple of Rolls Royces.
Yes, John.
But let me tell you this. Running that lot is much, much more expensive, but I never, ever, 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 ever taken the McDonald's, and they're banned, all of them, from ever going into one. Pappas Bars is the one.
And I'm sure they take notice of you, John.
Thanks for your call in, dear John. We've got another call on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, sorry, it's another John.
John.
I promised I wouldn't call back. Just a couple of points, because you're coming from which made me slightly more amenable to the EU. You know, I follow this Tax Injustice Network, which is quite incredible. 200 journalists exposing all the, you know, tax fiddles. And that's why I say US has been piddled upon, but we've been piddled upon, the rest of the world has been piddled upon by most of the multinationals. And we don't seem to do anything about it. But effectively, we've had two journalists, and we had a journalist murdered, assassinated last week in Slovakia on this, who worked for Tax Justice Network. We have another one in Malta assassinated. And everybody should follow Tax Justice Network. But just to put a point to you, we've had, it is changing. France and Germany have tried to get on the back of this corporation tax fiddle, because it's hundreds of billions that have been, as you can see by the 16 billion from Apple alone, that's been cheated from Europe and the rest of the world. They've tried to come on, and they've said to the guys, we'd like to see in Europe perhaps a sort of a sales tax or a turnover tax, so the money goes to the right people. And what pointedly, two of the culprits who facilitated it, Luxembourg and Ireland, though I think the game's up, have turned against that, which is really tax fairness to the rest of Europe. Before Sharon gets on, just another very quick point for Sharon. It's been discovered, well, basically, it's known that 40 to 50% of the hidden wealth of the world is held by European, UK protectorates like British Virgin Islands and what else. We're doing nothing about it. And until the rest of the world starts doing something about it and paying the fair taxes, then perhaps we'll see a more balanced, a more social program for people who deserve it. I mean, I think it's ridiculous that governments have allowed this to carry on for, and Trump again is a guy who's changed it somewhat. He's gotten back nearly $300 billion from Apple coming back into the US with a change of tax laws. There may have to be some incentive, because I think it's right the way through the whole of businesses, politicians. They're all up to their necks in it regarding the tax fiddles they can get. As I say, 40 to 50% of the hidden wealth is effectively in UK domiciled protectorates.
Thanks for the call in, John. I want to get to another one. I've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I don't think I need to say anything after what John has just said. I absolutely 100% agree with him that the bottom line of these massive corporations is that they are not being monitored, that they are not being made to return that wealth into society, and so the trickle-down effect simply doesn't happen. You've got these people of immense wealth hoarding. It's vile. I worked for a wonderful company that was established for over 100 years in London, and they were a family company, that put back their wealth into their employers every single year and showed their appreciation for their own wealth by giving back to the people that helped them to become wealthy. And what you've got is you've got a mentality of extreme greed and narrowness of perspective on the world, with no sense of responsibility whatsoever for what they are creating, which is great poverty in pockets around the world, and governments who are not doing anything about it. Very sad.
Thank you. Thank you for your call in. Going to go live to the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official, and that's Richard saying, the difference is that Spain is a pull economy compared to the UK, which is a push economy, if you can explain the difference. While the consumer is ultimately in charge of what they buy, but no one is forced to buy it. So there's a difference between a push and a pull economy. Nathan, your thoughts on what you've heard so far?
I missed a point on that push and pull economy, but that's okay.
I know. Well, perhaps Richard can drop me a line making out that on Talk Radio Europe official about what the difference between push or pull economy, or 952-784-4000. I'm expecting a phone call from John any second now. But yes, your thoughts.
Well, the discussion that's gone on this morning, I mean, just makes it very clear how difficult it is and how, you know, far apart the different viewpoints are. People talk about, basically everybody is saying somebody should do something, whether it is the masses doing something or whether it is governments doing something. It is very easy to say somebody should do something. I'm not sure who that's going to be. John said, you know, it's either going to be, you know, people not buying all of this stuff, or, you know, conflagration with war or something like that. I think what we have is something that will continue to forge on in the middle, and, you know, I don't know where we're going to go, but the problem is there is no one in charge who can really do anything on a big enough scale. Whether we back down and, you know, America first, the UK first, France first, whatever, and everybody becomes, you know, much more isolationist, I don't think it's going to happen, but that obviously would be one way, I suppose, to bring things into a size that someone within that country, if we're talking about countries, can control. But I don't think it's going to happen.
And we're going live to the lines, busy as always. Good morning, caller, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Sharon Alicante. Just to say, one of the biggest sellers of toys, believe it or not, is the aggressive marketing from McDonald's. They get offering free little toys to children. So you go for a birthday treat one Saturday. Can we go back next Saturday? And they go back. Now, what I think we need is parents giving in to children, of course, which is ridiculous. They never used to do it so much when I was younger. But what I think we need to do is some imaginative teaching in schools. We have to start teaching children about roughly what's going on, about basic economics. I wish when I had been at school, they'd taught us about mortgages, but they didn't. And I think now we have to start teaching children, not telling them the awful things that are going on. They have to have a childhood. But when they get to about junior school, start slowly, imaginatively educating them, because the parents are giving in already, as that emailer said. People think they want it, so they give into it. They give into the children and they buy it, and that's why we've got Starbucks in Spain, which is very sad, because the obesity the obesity thing in Spain is growing as well. Also, all the problems that come with it, all from America. But I think we have to start educating our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to go quickly to the line. I just want to go quickly to the other line, because I've been holding for a while. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanca.
Yes, Kate.
Right. One, a member of the panel talked about the UK having left the EU, and it hasn't. Two, EU evolved by the consent of all its members, including the UK, from the EEC to the EU. And on the point that's just being actively argued now, continuing nations... The countries can take anti-monopoly legislation, which is quite effective. And secondly, I think that there is some legislation that's coming through the EU that some of the Brexiteer stalwarts are trying to avoid. It's to do with declaration of money and where they've put it. And that comes in, interestingly enough, on the day after the UK may leave the EU on the 1st of April, would you believe, 2019.
Kate, thank you very much for your point once again.
I just, the Sharon thing, it's all well and good to say these things, but it's just not true. Sharon, I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but I'm 66 this year.
And I'm looking very good for it,
and
I say.
Well, it's only because of sitting in the sun.
Exactly.
Vitamin D is wonderful. But the whole issue is, they give these toys away in McDonald's. Well, when I was a kid, they gave you little cards in tea. They give you fag cards. You collected these. They were incentives for people to buy more. It's not changed in all my lifetime. And I'm not sure, Sharon, but I think your parents probably would have treated you at some stage, but you wouldn't see it the same as what looked like these expensive toys that are absolutely worth nothing. Yeah, it's just, it goes on and on and on. And the same, John said the same, and John Dodd says the same. But, you know, bring it back to when you were kids and genuinely look at it and say, yeah, I do remember. It didn't appear the same value. I remember as a kid being given a pencil. Wow, that was like unbelievable. And if I went to Russia and they gave us a pad of paper. And they thought that was like, wow, that's because all the paper they produced in Russia, they exported.
And we're going to go live to the lines. Good morning, caller. Thank you for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Okay, Giles, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm with Nathan because no one forced anyone to go to McDonald's or Starbucks. If you want to go there, it's your choice. And sometimes parents fail to say no to their children. And if your children want free toy, just go to Toys R Us or other shop and buy a toy for your children. And if your children want to go to McDonald's, just say no, because no one is forcing you to take them there.
Absolutely. And thank you for the call in. Very impassioned there. As I said, the other fast food outlets are available. Let's take a very quick call before I go to the next break. Good morning, Cooley. Good, you're live on TRE. What's your name?
Hi. It's Bertha here.
Yes, Bertha.
Hi. Sorry, I'm going a bit peculiar this end. I agree with Sharon about the peer pressure that forces parents into very expensive options on children's birthdays and Christmas parties and all the rest of it. The monopolies companies certainly do a good job on manipulating children. And in turn, that creates great pressure on parents. It's very sad. The idea is not bad. It's the fact that these companies do not put the money back into the countries that they're working in. And if you look at Norway and see what Norway does with huge companies, that is a perfect model to work on. But unfortunately, we don't have governments that are willing to go down that path.
Thank you for your calls.
This is Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Into the last 10 minutes of the show, Talk Radio Europe's live and lively programme, where the panellists discussion is still going on furiously between each other as I'm doing my intro. Thank you, Alf. Joining me, I do like it when we've got this panel in, I must admit, it's good fun. Joining me in the studio today, Nathan Thomas, Alf Brewer, and the value for money, John Harper. Buy one, get one free, given away with every fast food outlet, of course. And there's a thought. Figurines of the panel, cuddly toys of the panel.
Just for Alf, actually, I did actually at one point in time run Wimpy Hamburgers in Spain.
You did? I've just remembered that.
They were special.
John, when John was running, it was very special.
In Spain. I wonder where that meat came from.
Oh, I know where it all came from. Exactly. I visited the factories.
Yes.
Catalonia Park.
I'd totally forgotten about that. Good grief. Yeah.
1995 or something. Yeah, something around there.
Right then. So you never look at your Knickerbocker glory in the same way again. Right then.
We always said we put the E in the burger, not the name.
Yes, right then. Moving swiftly onwards then. Nathan, you're going to come back on a point for Sharon, sorry.
One of the things Sharon said, which I think is very true, I don't know how you accomplish this, but she was talking about education. And I think it is true. There is, I think, a need in schools anywhere. It doesn't matter. And I don't know what course it would be. It's something that I don't think exists now. But mortgage is practical things that everybody has to deal with now that I guess 50, 60 years ago, you know, they never thought of teaching you in school. But there is so much going on now, so much information is there that you can get in an instant on your phone, on your computer, on whatever. I don't, like I say, I don't even know what the course would be, but I think the idea is very good that we need schools to expand and teach. It's almost a course in practical reasoning or something. I don't know what you'd call it or how you'd do it. And I mean, it's got to start somewhere, of course. So, I mean, maybe this is the start of it, but to educate people when they are young of what the situation is that you are in as far as information and so on, because it is so different than even when I grew up, any of us grew up, the world has changed so much. And I think most of that change for us has been in the area of communication. I mean, for our parents, it was transportation. I mean, parents, grandparents, I mean, cars were a brand new thing. But by the time my parent, while you know, they were still alive, I mean, people were flying around in jets and everything. But communication hadn't changed a whole lot. I mean, we hadn't, you know, we were just getting into sort of what we have now with the internet and cell phones and things like that. And it is so complicated. And I think people do need more education on things like that.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Kate Costa-Blanca.
Yes, Kate.
Endorsing enormously Sharon and Nathan's points, and there used to be, certainly in the UK, an opportunity to do that kind of training in practicing in applied philosophy, thinking clearly. That under
you seem to be getting blocked out by somebody there, Kate. Just please say again.
Sorry,
there was a beeping sound while she was talking.
Yeah. you could in the UK do it under heading of current affairs or whatever. There was way, and certainly a large number of subject matters, particularly history and English. There's an opportunity to get people to practice their ability to reason.
General studies, wasn't it? There was general studies. I think I remember vaguely taking that in my youth.
Depends which school you went to as well.
Oh, right, OK.
Yes.
And most education in the UK, well, when I was growing up, I went to a grammar school. I'm not sure if that was by choice or whether because I sat the 11 plus about 17 times and they needed to fill the place, something along those lines. But nevertheless, education basically was it's the ability to allow people to have the opportunity to find out more in the future. So it's no use teaching people about mortgages if they're never going to have anything to do with them, but you should teach about, you know, where you can go to find out, what, you know, economics that go with it, etc. But, you know, understanding in the UK, it's hard enough for the teaching, you know, folks to get into English, mathematics, math, as they call it in America. That's like aluminum, isn't it?
Indeed, I'd say so.
But there's, you know, they're teaching them the basics is hard enough, but the education system is designed to find out your brightest people, because that's the ones you drive on through into industry, and it's industry that ends up paying for most of that. When I was a kid, they used to teach us things like, which is forgotten now, democracy. How'd you get involved? How'd you become a local councillor? You met your local councillors. No, you didn't do it every week. Every now and again, you met the local councillors. And they explained to you about what they did, how they did it, why they did it, and why you should get involved in them doing it. Yes, I know it's political, but somebody has to make the decisions on how your rubbish is cleared.
All right, then. OK, indeed. Kate, thanks for your call in there. And, John, you want to come back on a point there as well?
Yeah, when I was 11, I worked out that my school, which was a secondary modern, I actually chose not to go to a grammar school because I wanted to stay with my mates. It was solidarity at the time. So when I was 11, I worked out that I had a school that was going to produce button pushers or pen pushers, and as I was neither category, it wasn't of any use to me. Our schools need to teach people how to think, not what to think.
Absolutely. And I just want to go back over to the emails here, who said, Alberto Diaz has written in saying, thank you very much for the show. I'll give you another 5 stars of as soon as Viewpoint panel. Regular features, gorgeous Maria Vechkinova, as well as Hans Hermann Hopp, Taki, Vladimir Putin, Jeremy Clarkson, Jesus Huerta de Soto, Sebastian Vettel, Lou Rockwell, Ron Paul, Craig Roberts, Pat Buchanan, and so on. That would be a Viewpoint team as well. And an email in as well from...
Alex Braid, who says, any chance that you could take a picture of the panel at the end of the program and post it to the TRE Facebook page? Basically, if you imagine sort of that Ocean's 11 picture, you know, of George Clooney, Brad Pitt, etc., you've pretty much got the Viewpoint panel. Right time, almost out here. My thanks to my panel, as always, Alf, once it gets the word in.
It's the back half.
It's the back half, indeed.
You can have the back half.
You can have the back half of Al. What am I bid for that? Thank you very much for today. John Harper.
Hello. Thank you. Goodbye. Good value.
And also, back with us, Nathan Thomas.
Nice to be back, I think.
This programme will be repeated, hopefully, at 6 o'clock. Steve, thanks for your calls in. Stephen Ritson is up next.
Views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.